Hey, writers, join our First Draft Weekly Writers Club. We meet every Tuesday from 12 to 1 Eastern Time. For more information, go to writingclassradio.com and click on the Classes tab.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
I'm Allison Langer, and this is Writing Class Radio. You'll hear true personal stories and learn how to write your own stories. Together, we produce this podcast, which is equal parts heart and art. By heart, we mean the truth in a story. And by art, we mean the craft of writing. No matter what's going on in our lives, Writing Class is where we tell the truth. It's where we work out our shit. And there's no place in the world like Writing Class. And we want to bring you in.
Today on our show, we bring you a story by Kevin Griffin that was originally performed on stage at the Flagstaff Festival of Science in October 2023. Like on episode 174, 175, and 177 so far, this was a collaboration with ECOS, the Center for Ecosystem Science and Society at Northern Arizona University, and Story Collider, a podcast that airs true science stories. Well, we explained this on the last few episodes, but very quickly, let's explain again how Dr. Jane Marks and Bruce Hungate, both conservation ecologists and professors at NAU, came to us because they understood that they wanted to personalize their own science stories and then have their PhD students personalize theirs. So we worked together with them over several months, both online and then in person, and work to make their stories stage ready. So all the stories that you're hearing in this science series were told on stage without notes, which is not easy.
No.
Then these students nailed it. They nailed them so hard that we got a standing ovation.
You know, the reason why we find these stories really important and why Jane and Bruce really wanted to develop their writing in a more personal way is so that people listening would start trusting scientists, one scientist at a time. And hopefully long term, that will help legislators and people making the rules and the laws start, and even just you and me, like anybody listening, just to start really caring and believing more about what's going on in our environment. The climate change stuff, it's real.
We're trying to change public opinion and make people care about the environment. And for me, it's working.
They are. They really are trying to do this, and we feel lucky to be a part of it. So, and we hope you guys love their stories too and start trusting them one story at a time.
Kevin Griffin's story uses science to help understand an emotional connection to a place. And she did it by having us, the listener, fall in love with the place. She set the scene and she raised the stakes. Back with Kevin's story after the break.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network. Or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
I'm Allison Langer, and every Tuesday from 12 to 1 Eastern Time, I host First Draft. It's a class, kinda, because you'll get a little bit of instruction, but mostly it's a group where you come together with other writers online, write to a prompt and share what you wrote. It's the only way to get better. Come join me. Check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com or go to patreon.com/writingclassradio to learn more. We're back. This is Allison Langer, and you're listening to Writing Class Radio. Up next is Kevin Griffin telling her story, What Grows Back.
When I woke up, the bear was watching me. He was standing there about 5 feet away. He'd snuck up on me while I slept, this huge animal, And in the moonlight, I could see his fur glinting this beautiful cinnamon color as he breathed. We stared at each other, my blue eyes, his depthless black ones. And in that moment, I recalled with absolute clarity that humans can be prey. We stared a little longer. It must have only been seconds. And then the moment broke, and the bear turned and ran. He goes thundering down the slope to the trees. I get out of my tent, and I go up the hill to where my coworker Wesley is sleeping peacefully. He's missed the whole thing, and I shake him awake, and I'm like, Wesley, you will not believe what the hell just happened to me. I'm telling him the story, and he goes, how fucking cool, right? I'm like, yeah, it's amazing. And then he goes, were you scared? And I'm like, obviously. I was recalling, as I sat there, as I told that to him, that I was scared. You know, I realized, even though they tell you, sort of your first week in the Sierra Nevada, that black bears don't mean you any harm, knowing that didn't really change it in that moment, you know? Black bears don't really see you as food, and if you offer them food, they're gonna be interested. But for the most part, they're not gonna fight you unless something's really wrong, unless circumstances have changed and they've become dangerous. That was my fourth summer in the Sierra Nevada. And my job was as a biological science technician, right? I would hike into these beautiful alpine fens and wet meadows, and I would survey the vegetation there, from the smallest moss to the tallest overhanging tree. We would backpack in for 8 days at a time, and we would look at everything, the groundwater, the hydrology. It wasn't always easy, but I loved it. And the job was really an excuse for me to pursue my true passion, which was the place, this kingdom of gnarled pines and granite peaks and blue lakes that were so beautiful, they made my dusty little desert-born heart ache. I saw wonders in the Sierra Nevada, and I know that's corny, but it is absolutely true. One summer, I sat at the top of Half Dome, and I watched the Perseid meteor shower swing by, these stars so close it felt like I could touch them. Another, I sat on the shores of a place called Lake South America, and I watched a golden eagle fly by, his wings longer than I was tall. And sure, there were mosquitoes, lots of mosquitoes, and lightning and hunger. And sometimes Wesley, one of my best friends who I'd known for forever, we would get mad at each other. He'd eat the last piece of chocolate or he'd annoy me that day. And I wrecked my knees and two relationships. And to this day, I cannot eat instant oatmeal without wanting to throw up. Still, it was always worth it, you know, no matter how scary, no matter how hard. So it's maybe unsurprising that about a month after the incident with the bear, Wes and I have hiked into a new ridgeline. We're about 200 miles to the south of where we'd seen the bear. We're in Sequoia National Park, and we're up high, 13,000 feet. We're above treeline, and that night we sit there and we make our ramen, and we're chatting as the sun sets and the stars come out, and they unfold all around us like this beautiful blanket, this tapestry, and it feels like we're at the top of the world. I think to myself how absolutely lucky and how absolutely grateful I am to be there in this place that I love so much and this place that I would spend forever in if I could. And I wake up the next morning and my throat is sore. My eyes are crusted shut, and when I pry them open, I rub them on my sleeve, the sky is brown. The sun is coming up and it's this creepy blood red color. And even though it's like 5:30 in the morning, I already have a headache and I know that this fire is different. I climb out of my tent and Wes is already awake. You know, he couldn't sleep through this one. He's shoving tent poles into his bag and he looks at me and he goes, we need to get out of here. And I say, definitely. And as we're putting our packs back on, he looks at me and he asks, are you scared? And I say, obviously. Wes and I have an 18-mile hike out to our car. We have a 5-hour drive around the southern tip of the Sierra to get back to park headquarters, where we start and end every trip and where all of our belongings are, all of our coworkers. And that entire 18 miles, this day and a half of travel, I'm thinking about how scared I really am. Because the thing about fire in the Sierra is that it shouldn't be scary. It should be a part of the landscape. Like the bear, it's this thing that really only becomes dangerous when circumstances have gone wrong. But in the Sierra, things have changed and things have gone wrong. And these gentle fires that are supposed to help the sequoias open their cones and weed out the weak and weedy trees, they've become something terrifying. And I could see it as we drove into town, this plume of smoke rising out of Kern Canyon, twisting in the light. By the time we got home, the fire had beaten us there. Flakes of ash are falling from the sky, and the air quality index says that things are unhealthy beyond unhealthy. Our boss tells us that we should be ready to evacuate, and Wes and I are. We pack our belongings into our matching beat-up Subarus, and in whatever space is left, our boss starts handing us Tupperware totes full of herbarium specimens, because in case the park burns down, they want to make sure that these rare plant collections are safe. We check the house, we click the lights off, and I stand on the porch looking up at these mountains that had been my favorite home. And I realize I'm not really scared for me. I'm scared for the place. I'm scared for what happens after these massive fires. We post this flyer on the door of the house as we lock it for the incoming firefighters to see that says the occupants of this residence evacuated on 9/16/2020, and we drive away. It's been 3 years now since that fire, and these days I don't swim in alpine lakes, and I don't commune with black bears, and I don't measure my time by how many months have passed since I was last in the Sierra. What I study now is what comes after. I don't want this to be a story about despair or grief or the loss that I feel watching those mountains burn. I want this to be a story about what grows back. And that's why I'm here, so that I can wake up every day and try to make a tiny piece of this a little bit better. Thank you.
Wow. Okay, so I have heard this a bunch of times live on stage in Flagstaff. We've reviewed it, we've offered feedback. But this time I recognize the genius in the way it's set up, the emotion that drew me in and made me care. And I loved it so much more.
I got chills three times.
Yeah.
I did. I was so moved by it. And it's been a little while since we've heard it. And so for me, I was like, what? Wow. It's a really good story. Talk about what drew you in at the very beginning, because I want to too.
You know, we live in Miami and we rarely slow down. Occasionally I'll be driving over a bridge and be like, wow, I live in a really pretty place. There's water, there's beaches, but we don't go. Like I almost never go. And so the wonder with which this narrator viewed her surroundings made me want to go. I just fell in love with it. So when she then starts talking about the fire, the stakes were higher for me.
I wanted to say two things about what you're saying. One is, like, I thought the way she started the story was so captivating. The bear was watching. Like, she's eye to eye with a bear. That's different, you know?
Yeah, well, she brings it back and she compares that fear. So he's like, were you scared? She's like, obviously. And then again, when the fire starts, he asks her again, are you scared? So we see her, what scares her, which I thought was really cool.
But you were saying that that we live in Miami and we never stop to think about or look around and be captivated by how beautiful it is outside. So one, she started in a way that completely grabbed me and drew me in because it was so scary and exciting. And also the second thing that is also true is, like, I felt so in love with her surroundings. Like, she described them like with this like glorious adoration. And I got chills. Like, one of the times when she was talking about, I think it was like when the stars came out and like a blanket of stars. Like, I don't know. It was just so beautiful. You know, we were talking about this another time. And I think on the last podcast episode where we brought in a sign story, and these sign stories really are making me care about this time, the Sierra Nevadas. I'm so in love with this place because she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also want to spend a little bit more time outside here. Yesterday, I actually took pictures of wildflowers that are growing in my yard. like I'd never seen it before, but there's like yellow and purple, like different colored flowers. But okay, let's get back to the story. So yeah, she, it's a great start. And then she's really funny. Like humans can be prey. I was like, oh shit. And then she did that thing that you just mentioned where he said, were you scared? And she said, obviously. And then she brought it back. That was so satisfying.
Yeah.
And then she brought back the same language again. And this is just brilliant storytelling. When she said later in the story, fire should only be dangerous when things have gone wrong. That was the exact same language she used with the bear. I felt like, I don't know, when writers do that, there's like a pact or something like between us. Like, I don't know. I just feel like it's so, I feel thankful. I feel like I'm let in. That's what it is. I feel super let in on their thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think that what she did really cool is because now we love this area just as much as she does, that we're also scared, right? And so it becomes personal to us. We're not just like, oh, her house burned down. It's the, or whatever, her area burned down. It's that we love this and want to go visit now. And so now we can't. So making it personal, then people want to protect it. So for instance, like with a lot of these science stories, we see them as like, well, it's really not going to happen to our generation. Why should I stop using plastic? You know, it's inconvenient to me, but, and I'm not even going to be around when this occurs. But if somebody says, well, your grandchildren or your children are not going to be able to leave their house because climate change, you know, like everything that's going on right now will affect them. They won't be able to swim in the waters. They won't be. And we kind of see a little bit of that now, but it doesn't affect us in a big way.
This woman is showing it to us in real time. It exactly. happened to her. Exactly. She was in the mountains in this beautiful, beautiful location that she described in a way that gave me chills. And then she had to rush out
and leave a note. I was like, oh my God, this is serious.
What about the 18-mile walk?
Yeah.
That's a long walk. Walking takes 3 miles an hour on flatland. Like, God. Brutal. It was so, yeah, day and a half. Ah,
yeah.
Yeah.
The way this is set up, and I really want to reiterate that because, you know, to tell a really good story, you have to build the stakes. You have to lay the groundwork. You have to show us why we care, why you care. And then what happened? So there was a real moment where like all of this, something big happened that changed everything. And so then she shows us that and then the resolution. So
it was the morning when the sky was brown.
Yeah.
That was it.
And then mm-hmm. she doesn't just say, and this sucked. Like an ending is huge. So why do we love this story so much is because her ending was so thoughtful. And also it told us what the story is about. Yes, bad shit is going to happen. But why are we telling the story? It's because we want to show you that we can repair and that's what she cares about, repairing and making things better as we move forward, which I thought was just a beautiful message.
Agree. The way she ended with, I want this to be a story about what grows back. Good.
Yeah. Excellent.
And that's why she's here. And that's why she's doing all of this. She used great detail. This story is so good. Yes.
Thank you, Kevin, for sharing your story. Thank you, Ecos, NAU, Story Collider, and Bruce Hungate and Jane Marks for bringing science to the mainstream. Kevin Griffin is a PhD student at NAU in the Center for Ecosystem Science and Society at Northern Arizona University. She is interested in how communities respond to disturbance in extreme environments, and her research is primarily focused on using biological soil crust for restoration applications, their tolerance for extreme environments, and their responses to global change. Writing Class Radio is hosted by me, Allison Langer.
And me, Andrea Askowitz.
Audio production is by Matt Kundle, Evan Serminski, Chloe Emont Lane, and Aiden Glassy at the Sound Off Media Company. Theme music is by Justina Chandler. There's more Writing Class on our website, including stories we study, editing resources, video classes, writing retreats, and live online classes. If you want to write with us every week, Or if you're a business owner, community activist, scientist, group that needs healing, entrepreneur, and you want to help your team write better, check out all the classes we offer on our website, writingclassradio.com. Join the community that comes together for instruction, an excuse to write, and the support from other writers. To learn more, go to our website or patreon.com/writingclassradio. A new episode will drop every other Wednesday.
There's no better way to understand ourselves and each other than by writing and sharing our stories. Everyone has a story. What's yours?
Produced and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.
It's said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.